Welcome to Dig Life Deep with John Aidan Byrne.
On this episode, we'll talk about the extraordinary and astonishing case against Donald J. Trump. He was charged on 34 felony counts in Manhattan in the past week, and the ex-president pleaded not guilty in this hush money case and attacked the DA on political grounds. I'm going to draw comparisons to the French Revolution. And we'll also hear from Ira Wolf in his weekly Future Shock 2.0 segment on ChatGPT, the AI revolution, and signs of job losses in this sector.
We keep digging for the secrets and stories of uncommon and everyday things and interesting people.
I hope you're all real well, because I must say I was a bit taken aback in the past week. So I am doing well, but as I said, in a perpetual state of shock, which I'm now coming out of. I hope you're enjoying and celebrating all these blessed and wonderful holidays, Easter, Passover. And if you're a person who doesn't celebrate those occasions, you're just relaxing and enjoying the holidays otherwise. I'm going to have to get to the point here. Trump charged with 34 felony counts. The ex-president pleads not guilty in New York hush money case. That's Stormy Daniels. And he attacks the DA as a political hack. That was the headline in the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, April the 5th. I watched with great alarm and terrible sadness, not because it was the former president Donald J. Trump. If it was Jimmy Carter, President Joe Biden, President Bill Clinton, President Nixon, Andrew Jackson, whether he was a Republican, a Democrat, an Independent, a Libertarian, I think I would be just as aghast. I think it ranks as one of the lowest moments in American history. And I was genuinely, and I will emphasize that, I was genuinely saddened, depressed, shocked to my very core, and very worried about where America is headed. Now, this is not to exonerate or condone anything Trump may have been alleged to have done in the case of the Stormy Daniel case. Certainly can't condone that. Please, let's get real here. But it was the entire nature and political theatrics of the entire sordid offence. Now, you have to remember, these were felony counts. Where this actually goes is deeply questionable and troubling. I think it will probably fade from the legal landscape when it goes back to court, apparently, in December. That's a long wait, right? And this was the district attorney Alvin Bragg's turn to bring quote-unquote justice in the case of President Trump, something he pledged apparently when he was running for office. What a political promise to make, and it just shows you how reckless and political this entire affair is. And it is on some levels New York City centric, Democratic, extreme Democratic centric. Again, I am not taking this on a political level. Whether it was any president of any political party or hue, would just have been as equally troubling. The last time I felt this dejected and sad probably was at the outset of COVID-19, when everything in America suddenly shut down, from public institutions to churches to schools to places of commerce. And some of those measures were indeed important and necessary, and precautions were certainly necessary. We did not know the full extent of COVID, and there were health concerns at issue here, and let's not deny that. But I remember on one particular night going to a public place where I go to on many Monday nights for a gathering and to just clear my head. And I found that there was a sign up closed because of COVID-19 restrictions. And it remained so on Monday nights, gosh, maybe for at least a year. And I just felt torn inside and confounded, really, by the decision of the authorities to have closed this wonderful institution. Not a lot of people gather in this particular place. I won't identify it. And in terms of public safety, those measures could have been easily have taken because there was so much space in this particular institution. And anybody listening, I want to assure them, this is not some kind of a personal attack. They were doing the bidding of federal and New Jersey state officials. But I thought in hindsight, it was kind of a ridiculous measure to have closed this public institution. And of course, some places had to stay open and they would have been retail stores that sell grocery and other items. And you look back and that we got through that okay, and I didn't see any massive outbreaks of COVID in some of these stores that sell grocery and necessary items. I'm getting off topic somewhat. I want to go back to the 34 felony counts against Donald Trump. Now, you're going to have to remember that the criminal case against the former president, Donald Trump, which was unsealed in the past week, and I'm coming to you on Holy Week, Easter, Passover for some people, and just a holiday for others. Everybody should enjoy it. The criminal case against the former president, Donald Trump, unsealed on a Tuesday, and it got widespread global media attention, and that was no coincidence. There was a reason for that, obviously, and I'll just leave you to guess why. Hinges on questions of criminal intent and untested interpretations of election law, and this is according to the best criminal defense specialists. Just a little bit of background. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg alleges the former president repeatedly violated New York's business record laws in trying to cover up a payment made to porn star Stormy Daniels in an attempt to buy her silence in the days before the 2016 presidential election. The indictment charges that the former president and others violated election laws and falsified business records as part of a broad scheme to suppress negative stories about Trump during the 2016 campaign. Bragg also alleges that participants mischaracterized for tax purposes the true nature of the payments made in furtherance of the scheme. Now, of course, under New York law, and now I'm quoting here extensively from the Wall Street Journal, the crime of falsifying business records is a misdemeanor, but it is a felony punishable by up to 4 years in prison to falsify records when there is a specific intent to commit or conceal another crime. The crime requires proof of an intent to defraud. That's why I think this whole case is going to collapse, because that's a very high bar. It's a weak case by Alvin Bragg. I think it's going to collapse and make Alvin Bragg look quite ridiculous. Again, I'm not taking this from a political point of view, whether it was any president. I would not like to see President Biden dragged through the courts in this absolutely appalling fashion. It's madness. Now, I had to do some research. Obviously, they're in a different category, impeachment. Impeachment is one thing, and you can publicize that, and then we can get kind of real. But even some of these impeachment cases, I think through history, were quite politically tinged and dodgy. But, I mean, I guess there were grounds for impeachment. Let's look at the record book here. Now, there were three presidents in history who have been impeached. And just for clarification and just to set the record straight, Nixon was not one of them, although he did face impeachment threats. But anyway, those threats ruined his reputation, although in other ways his reputation was redeemed on some levels by history. And of course, these three presidents, the most recent, Donald J. Trump, another rap against the former president. Donald Trump was the third president in American history to be impeached and the first president to be impeached twice. They don't like this guy. And then the others being Bill Clinton. We have to go back a long, long way to get the first one, Andrew Johnson. So look all of that up on your history books. I'm not going to get into a lot of details, but there was something sordid, obviously. And that's an understatement. In the case of the Clinton impeachment, the events themselves, of course, but then I never hear this mentioned, but even the work, maybe the brilliant legal work of the prosecutor, Kenneth Starr. And by that, I mean, I'd never quite understood why the Starr report was published, where it became a kind of a sophisticated public expose a la National Enquirer, where everyone could get copies of the Starr report. What inspired the government to do that, I never quite understood. I guess they wanted to make sure this was an impeachable offence. But, I mean, just, gosh, some of the details in that. I don't think Playboy magazine would carry some of the accounts. And I'm not recommending you go up and you look up the Starr report. Kenneth Starr apparently has passed on to his eternal reward. Brilliant guy. I always thought he was slightly strange. I won't say any more about Kenneth Starr. He went to the right colleges, and plenty of footnotes in the Starr report, but not my kind of bedside reading. Which brings us to another watershed moment. We have to go further back in history, and this is where I think there's an interesting parallel with today. And as I said, very sad moment, a shocking, slippery moment in American history, when we had Trump charged with 34 felony counts and in court last week. And you know he's running for president again. This might have actually played into his hands. They say it consolidates his vote among the Republican base, may have further polarized the nation between the left, the so-called left, and the so-called right. That's what they call it, left and right. No middle ground. Well, there is a bit of middle ground, but it's a polarized nation. I compare what's going on now in America on some levels with the French Revolution, which, as you know, was a watershed, pivotal, unprecedented event in global history that began in 1789 and then, of course, wrapped up in the 1790s with the rise of the powerful strongman Napoleon Bonaparte. During this period, French citizens radically and fundamentally altered their political landscape, uprooting centuries-old institutions as the monarchy and the feudal system, and they did other stuff. They changed the calendar, and everything became unworkable and crazy for a while. But they also resorted to the guillotine, and many people, according to accounts I've heard and read, were just sent to the guillotine on the passions of the people. No trials. Oh, you're guilty. We want equality. We want liberty, equality, and fraternity. You're guilty. You're going to the guillotine. Oh, by the way, that whole refrain, liberty, equality, fraternity. Where did we hear that recently? Liberty, equality, maybe equity today would be another word we hear about, and fraternity. So the crowds went after people they didn't especially like, sometimes on passions, sometimes on emotions. And then by other accounts I heard, the same mob even set themselves against themselves. The bloodlust could not be satisfied. And I feel we might be headed to a sort of revolutionary state in America, maybe held back and checked by our wonderful, more or less, US Constitution and our three branches of government and the very nature of the American idea that may just actually be protecting us from a total disaster. You could argue, and I think it's a fair argument, that the Trump show trial was a Soviet-style show trial. It's going to collapse, I think. If Trump doesn't shoot himself in the foot, yeah, I think it's going to help his campaign. I hope he does the right thing. And again, I'm not saying this because I'm a Trump booster. I just think the whole thing was dastardly. I would have also been saddened if any candidate from any party was dragged through the political mud like our president was in Manhattan last week. Because I'm proud of America. I wasn't born here, but I've had generations of family have come here, done well in America. And so in that sense, I'm pro-American. I'm actually a dual US and Irish citizen. I love this country. It has lifted more people out of poverty and helped more people from the old country. I'm getting a little sentimental here, from other countries, and I keep running into them from everywhere. Through my journalism, through my personal encounters, they come here from Cuba, they came here from the Soviet republics, they came here from Afghanistan, they come here from poor countries in Eastern Europe, they came here from Ireland, they still come here from Ireland, Italy, they come here from Africa, they come here from China for many reasons, for economic freedom, prosperity, just for the spirit of enterprise and freedom. And this is not a perfect country, America, by the way. Some things could be rectified. I think sometimes we could improve certain processes. I think we waste a lot, but that's the spirit of freedom, I suppose. I think we throw a lot away. I think there's way too much consumer debt. We have booms and busts. Maybe that should be looked at. We just throw so much away. We have a lot of dysfunction. We have a lot of loneliness in America. We have a lot of breakdown. We have a lot of polarization. Talk about the green movement. I'm not a climate alarmist by any extent, and I think they've gone overboard. I think we could be energy independent, so I'm not a climate alarmist. I think sometimes we do kind of destroy our environment in kind of ways we could improve in simple ways. You just go to a McDonald's or some of these stores and look at all the waste and throw away the extra bags and cans and everything. It's absolutely ridiculous. I've never saw that growing up. So it's probably getting just as bad in Europe. And maybe that's the consequences of having prosperity and freedom. They go hand in glove. But I'm going off topic a little bit here. This is a great country, the land of the brave, home of the free. Not so sure after what we saw last week. I think our freedom is under attack. And again, I'm reminded of the French Revolution. I'm reminded of what happened a couple of years ago when we had the Summer of Love. They're all wrapped up in one. I think we'll probably save ourselves from ourselves by the way our country is constituted. So I'll finish up on a sort of a patriotic note. I hope all of this made some political sense. God save America. God save our president. God save our various branches of government. And we must work together. And we must keep this big American idea afloat. Improve the areas which need improvement. And not destroy ourselves. And until the next time, take care. Just a couple of program notes. I had absolutely fantastic time this past week on a live stream with the team from Odeon Capital Conversations. That would be the brilliant Dick Beauvais, Chief Financial Strategist at Odeon Capital Group, and Matt van Alstyne, Odeon co-founder and managing partner. We were interviewed by the awesome team from Geeks, Geezers and Googleization podcast. That would be Ira Wolf and Jason Cochran. It was a live stream on Thursday, April 6th. We got a massive audience. And the topic was Navigating Never Normal, Digging Deep into SVB, Recession, Jobs and Artificial Intelligence. Wow, it was weighty stuff. We had questions from the audience we didn't get time to address, but maybe we'll do that later at some point. And it's now up there to view on YouTube. The live stream replays are up there on LinkedIn and up there on YouTube. And it'll be all on all the other various social platforms. And it will also be available on the top-rated Geeks, Geezers and Googleization podcast. And speaking of money and markets, you should tune in each week for every episode of the Odeon Capital Conversations podcast up there on Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeart and more, with the team from Odeon Capital Group, Dick Beauvais and Matt van Alstyne, and your host moderator, yours truly. And it's particularly worth following with recent events in the banking industry. And we devoted three episodes to it recently, to the banking crisis. And this episode, I find, stands out. Also, Dick Beauvais has new research and he puts a very fine point on something he's been talking about recently, with a new number, a startling and astonishing number. The US Federal Reserve is now officially broke to the tune of $1 trillion, according to Dick Bovee. You just have to go up on the podcast to get all the details on it and much more. And that's the Odeon Capital Conversations. And before we sign off for our weekly segment of Future Shock 2.0 with the awe-inspiring Ira Wolf, who always brings us stuff to mull over, to think, to contemplate on trends and trajectories in the labour markets. And who better than Ira Wolf, because he is a labour force expert. And here is his latest segment for Future Shock 2.0. And as we all know, ChatGPT is part of the AI revolution now unfolding. And how it will all shape out is a big question. It does promise productivity gains, but also quite a lot of revolutionary change, job gains and job losses. Here was a fascinating tail end of an interview I had with Ira when he laid out his vision and his thoughts on ChatGPT. I didn't play this on that last segment of Future Shock 2.0. You're going to get it here now. And here, Ira details how he has applied it in his own work and how it actually has resulted in job losses or future losses.
I haven't talked to anybody in the consulting world, you know, not manufacturing anything. But if you talk to somebody like for administrative staff,
avoided.
Yeah, I mean, one of the startups that she was on 2 weeks ago, she basically said one of the people left and they let go one of the other people just because they weren't, it was an intern, so they really wasn't let go. And she said, I'm not replacing them because we found that we're getting more content out within a day than we did in 2 weeks using ChatGPT. I honestly can see how that's possible. I'll tell you, the leaders hum, and I think I wrote about this. I said, how can I rephrase this? So I asked ChatGPT to write me a comment to getting that award or to getting selected.
Mm.
And I cleaned it up a little bit.
And that's what you used?
Yeah.
Wow.
I cleaned it up a bit, but it was like, okay, it started. That was where the holy cow came from, if you saw that comment.
I saw that, and I says, oh, God. I was chuckling. I says, wow, gosh, that was funny.
Yeah. You know? here's where it comes in. It was, I put it in, but you can put it in and ask for the tone. So I can say, I want a serious, I need a business-like, I need a professional, and I put in humorous. Because I find I'm putting in a lot of my comments like, how would you say this humorously? Because people will get it. You want them to chuckle and go, okay, I got it. So you can put different tones in there. So it's not giving you a straight static answer. It changes the answer based on the tone. So if I want to say engaging, professional, casual, business-like, humorous, it rewrites it.
Thank you, Ira Wolf. Ira Wolf is a top 5 global thought leader in his field, a TEDx talker, author, motivational speaker, and host of the very popular Geeks, Geezers, and Googleization podcast. And I had the pleasure of being on a live stream with Ira and Jason Cochran, along with the team from Odeon Capital Conversations this past week. It's up there now on LinkedIn, YouTube, and on social media for the replay. And we'll have more for you next week and with some great, great interviews coming up. I'm just going to give you a sneak preview. I have an exclusive interview with, wait for it, the Archduke of Austria, Eduard Habsburg. He's also the Hungarian ambassador to the Holy See. He's out with his new book, The Habsburg Way, 7 Rules for Turbulent Times. And there is a superb and splendid foreword in this book by the Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, the President of Hungary, and various other luminaries such as George Cardinal Pell and Newt Gingrich. Also have an interview with an economist and academic who's going to give us some pause. And he's written a series of books and papers on extreme poverty in the world. He's an economist. He has had a career with the US Labor Department. He is brilliant on statistics. He's concerned about poverty in the world, as I am. Nobody wants to see somebody suffering in that way. But he has great questions to ask about statistics compiled by the World Bank and the United Nations, which maybe confuses how we understand poverty and the numbers and misleads us, is how probably Stephen Payson would characterize it. And he also teaches in academia. So we'll have that coming up quite soon. Stephen Payson on extreme poverty in the world. Big questions he has on the stats compiled by the World Bank and the United Nations. He says they mischaracterize and totally mislead the public. So it's important to have these numbers straight. So that's all coming up on future episodes, upcoming episodes of Dig Life Deep. And on until then, on our next episode, take care. I'm your host, John Aidan Byrne.
You are listening to Dig Life Deep with John Aidan Byrne. You can reach the host in the U.S. at 973-529-4699. That's 973-529-4699. 973-529-4699. Email burndesk@gmail.com. That's burndesk, B-Y-R-N-E, desk@gmail.com. Burndesk@gmail.com. Subscribe for free.